The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
And I just slowly go. And I kind of stop and bow my head. By this point, Eric has made his way up the stairway to heaven, up these flight cases. He's standing next to me on the PA stack. Both of us are in the spotlight. And he goes, "What is the first song you ever learned to play on the guitar, motherfucker?"
Hello, this is Chris Simpson from the Stage Left podcast, and welcome to part two of Jamie Moses. Most of you would have listened to part one, I'm hoping. And if you haven't, go back and listen to that, because loads of great stories are in there about playing with Queen, playing with Freddie Mercury, playing with Paul McCartney. And Jamie's had such an incredible career, we just couldn't fit it into one episode. So loads of hilarious stories in part two. This is Jamie Moses. Peter Green.
Yeah.
You played with Peter Green, is that right?
Yeah, well, it was the opening of a Fender showroom in near East Grinstead, and they wanted our band, this Red Sox thing, to play it and to be the band that other people could get up with. And Brian was there. In fact, I got a picture somewhere of, and Brian, I got a picture of Brian playing a Strat. It was unusual. It was on the wall, you know. He got up, "Yes, ladies and gentlemen, here he is, Brian May." And he got up and played a couple of songs, and then and Peter Green was there, so he said, "Oh, Pete, do you want to get up?" Said, "Yeah, okay then." So said, so somebody handed him another Strat, and he said, "Oh no, no, that one's blue. I can't play a blue guitar." Wow. I mean, it was in a little room, not much bigger than, well, it was a bit bigger than this, but you know, it wasn't a gig as such. We were standing on the floor. There's no stage.
Wow.
And, yeah, but he was, you could see he was troubled by it. He was worried he couldn't possibly play a blue guitar.
Wow.
And so I said, "Okay, how about any particular color, you know?" "White one?" It's a bit Spinal Tap, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so he handed him that. Oh, I can't remember what color he ended up with, but... So I got a picture of me, and because we'd run out of amplifiers, weirdly, at a Fender showroom, I ended up just singing. And I got a picture of me singing with Brian on this side of me and Peter Green on the other.
Oh, wow.
And I'm not even holding the guitar. So I was holding a bottle of beer instead.
What did you play?
Eh?
What song did you play?
Oh, I can't remember.
Oh.
Oh, it would have been something like Kansas City or... Yeah. Or Hippie Hippie Shake. Or
yeah, something like that.
Something that everybody knows, you know.
So imagine you're in a scenario where your singer is singing a song on stage. You've just been handed a guitar. Your guitar tech has tuned it up. And you're starting playing and there's a solo coming up and you realise the guitar actually is out of tune. What should you be doing in that situation? What should a guitarist do if they realise the guitar's out of tune and they're playing live? And should they stop? Should they play through it? What should they do in that situation?
Wow. It's never happened to me to the extent where it's been so bad that I thought, shit, I can't play this solo. I'm going to have to find a way around it. Or what I have done is when I've broken a string on the Strat, and it's a synchronized tremolo, so it's a floating trem. And if you break a string, the tension of all the other strings is reliant on the tension of each of the others.
Right.
So if you break a string, the whole guitar goes badly out
shit.
Of tune.
Right.
Yeah, because, yeah, so... And I've done things where I've just had to do it, play it on one or two strings, and and just play less. Don't play the whatever solo you normally play. Play something different, and bend the string into pitch, and just play two or three notes, and just, you know, make them long notes, short notes, but don't get too adventurous and just busk around it. I tell you, this did happen to me with Eric Burden once from the Animals. I was with him for years, and we were touring America in Texas. And at the end of the show, we'd finish with Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood or something. I can't remember.
Yeah.
But, of course, the big one is House of the Rising Sun, isn't it?
Classic.
So they built this stairway for me, because when we come back on, it's in darkness, and there's this staircase from amp flight cases up at the back of the PA stacks.
Right.
So in the end, I end up standing on the PA stacks. and on a signal, the spot comes onto the guitar, and I go... Shit. Except
properly. Do that again.
And I go... And Eric comes in with that. Okay, I'm handed the guitar by the guitar tech, and what he's done is he's tuned one of the strings. It's all perfectly in tune, but not necessarily to the right notes. So he's got one of the strings which he's tuned a semitone out. So I start playing, and it goes. And I just slowly go. And I kind of stop and bow my head. By this point, Eric has made his way up the stairway to heaven, up these flight cases. He's standing next to me on the PA stack. Both of us are in the spotlight. And he goes, "What is the first song you ever learned to play on the guitar, motherfucker?" And he points the mic at me, and I go, "This one, Eric." But while this is going on, the guitar tech is going, "Ah!" He's running up. He gives me another guitar that's in tune. And he goes, "Well, do you want to try playing it again? And this time, play it in tune." Okay, sorry, Eric. You know, and then played it.
Did he write that? Because there's always been a rumour about who wrote it.
Now that he is pissed off about this, and I don't blame him, really. It's traditional. It's a traditional song. It's... But Alan Price, because it was Animals, big worldwide number one, he wrote the bit that goes, I think I'm right in saying, he wrote the bit that goes... There is a house in between the verses.
Mm-hmm.
For that, he's claimed 50% of the writing credits.
Really?
It's now, if you look on the label, it says traditional stroke Price.
Wow.
Alan Price. Eric gets nothing for it.
And lyrics? The lyrics are traditional?
No. Yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah.
What a song.
Yeah.
What an experience to play it on top of all that and the guitar tune. Not to be tuned correctly. Another scenario. You're playing a gig. You know your stuff, obviously. And the singer decides on the spot they want to do the song in a different key as their voice is struggling.
Yeah.
What tips can you give to a guitarist who might not be able to straight away get, you know, adapt without a capo or something like that? What can you do to get through that?
No, you're fucked. unless you are of a standard where you can adapt to do that. For instance, that one, the House of the Rising Sun, take that as an example.
Mm.
That's in A minor.
And it's open chord.
So that's fine. If suddenly somebody says, I need to do that in G minor, off the top of my head, it'll have to go...
Impressive. Well done.
Like that. Okay, yes, but that's not easy.
No, that's not easy.
And unless you really know your stuff, you know, I'm not saying that, yeah, I'm this great guitar player, so I can do that. But it's just, that comes very naturally to me to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And unless it does come naturally, you are really screwed.
Mm.
Unless they say, I want, as you say, I want to play it higher, but that never happens.
Mm.
And well, very, unless a girl comes up to sing a guy's song,
mm.
in which case you stick a capo on,
and
you're, piece of cake.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
This may be looking into it too deeply, but like one of the key skills going forward between now and 2050, according to Forbes magazine, that people need to learn going forward is to adapt to change quickly because the world is changing so much. And I was thinking about the fact that you said that you went to so many different schools and you had to adapt to change quickly, and you can just, you're really good at adapting to change, like change doesn't throw you.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that was kind of in your formative years going around the world, the fact that you can adapt to change like that. I mean, that's so impressive to be able to do that.
Maybe. Maybe so. Yeah, well, you have to... The thing is, you're hired to do perform a service, and whether that's as a sideman or as the main act, if you're the sideman, you're hired by the main act to provide a service. If you're the main act, you're... Make no mistake, you've got a boss, and it's the people out there.
Mm.
And they have paid good money to see you do this, so you've got to... You got to do it. Although there's a certain kind of honor in it, you know, a certain kind of pride.
Who's the most underrated session player that you can think of that comes to mind?
Because I have Steve Lukather, who's an old friend. He's not underrated at all. Everybody knows he's great.
Perhaps someone who's gone under the radar a little bit maybe deserves more credit than they perhaps have got.
Okay, well, I would tell you, Prince as a guitar player is very underrated. James Taylor as a guitar player is really underrated.
Right, wow.
Fantastic guitar player.
Mm.
Stephen Bishop. You know, you don't know him. He did this thing...
Where's he from? Sorry, what?
He's an American singer-songwriter.
Oh, okay.
He did... What did he do that you might know? No, probably. No, maybe nothing. But he was big in the 70s, and he did this thing. Which goes on. Can't you hear the parade? It's called Little Italy, but that phrase is just
beautiful.
Fantastic, isn't it? Beautiful little phrase, that.
Can't you hear the parade? Somebody's calling my name. They're on the sidewalk, and all the people turn their heads to see. Ah, mama, am I holding on to the wings of a prayer?
And what's his name? James Taylor as well. Like I say, he only occasionally plays electric guitar, but great, great player. And Prince, you know, he's like Hendrix and some of the greatest funk players you've ever heard, all wrapped up into one.
Mm-hmm.
He's got it all, had it all.
When was the last time you ever went, wow, that's really hard to play, that's a bit of a challenge, and then worked through it? When was the last time you thought, God, it's really hard to play?
Well, I got something coming up, funnily enough. I'm doing a tour in the autumn. It's an 80s tour with, you know, Five Star and Jason Donovan and
really?
Martika and who else is on it? Hue and Cry. Sister Sledge. And it's one of the Sister Sledge things, which I've only just started listening to it, but it's that one. He's the greatest dancer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a real handful. I mean, so a bracelet's banging on the guitar there. But like I say, I've only just listened to it the first time yesterday, but I thought, wow, that's going to take a little bit of getting my head around.
Mm. So it does happen. Does happen to the pros that you hear stuff and you think,
oh, absolutely,
absolutely.
There was the solo in Kid Charlemagne by Steely Dan.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't easy, but I mean, I did get my head around it in the end. That's Larry Carlton. Oh, right. He's a player.
Yeah, yeah. Did you ever have to get play solos in like Bohemian Rhapsody or anything like that? Or did you? Here's a question: did you have to learn them in case Brian, for some reason, couldn't play a gig or anything like that?
Not for that reason, but I've had to learn most of them because with the SAS band or with other acts, when we play those songs, you know, when Rog sings them, or like in what is it, Radio Gaga.
Hmm.
It's got that down, 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 all that stuff, which obviously the other guy normally does.
Yeah.
With the curly hair. So I've had to learn a lot of those. Yeah.
When's the most you've ever suffered from imposter syndrome? So you're familiar with the idea of imposter syndrome? It's often people, it's quite a common ideology now that people.
You think I got no business being here?
Yeah, kind of like you're like. I'm going to be rumbled at some point. Someone's going to realise that. Exactly.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
So when was the worst kind of time you thought, oh, shit? Like, everyone gets it, no matter what level you're at.
Well, I get it. I can't think of anything specific, but if you find yourself in a setup where there's the other players are really, really good and like the top of their game and they're great readers, That was one. Yeah, well, with that...
The Freddie thing.
But there was another one where I was an imposter because I was... This is when I was like 18 and I was playing at... What's it called in Leicester Square? Is it the Lyceum in Leicester Square? There's a big kind of ballroom place
right,
there.
Okay, yeah.
I think it's still there. And it was like a Mecca band that they used to have... I was in the house band there, and it really was a reading gig, but they just told me the songs that we had to play, what key it was in, and I'd sit at home and I'd learn them, and I'd turn up and play them. But a couple of times they threw songs in that they hadn't told me they were going to play, but it turned out I was familiar with them anyway, so I can get my way through them.
Mm.
But maybe there's a couple of bits go, no, hey, you're supposed to be playing a part there, and I wasn't. And I was doing fine, but I told one of the girls, one of the backing singers, I just told, you know, in the dressing room, I said, I'll tell you, I'll let you know a secret. I can't read. She went, oh, really? She said, because the rest of the band could, you know. And the next day they fired me.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. I'd only been doing it for a week, but,
fuck
you know, but I've never been fired from a band before. So that was a kind of.
Wow. Maybe that's going back to the question I asked earlier. Maybe that's a complex that you have because you said the one thing that you would, the bad habits you got is you never learned to read. So
yeah,
maybe that like
exactly.
planted that seed, but it's not mattered. I mean, fucking hell, you've lived a dream playing, you know, great gigs and, you know, so it's not really got in the way. So.
No, it's been all right. It's been all right. I got through it. I bluffed my way through it.
Yeah.
And that's the one, by the way, the one piece of advice that I would give to anybody, kids especially, or anybody just starting out who wants to do what I do is. Above all else, learn to sing. Teach yourself to sing, go to lessons, whatever. Because suddenly then you're two people, you know? You've got, that means anybody who takes you on, there's one less person they have to hire.
Wow, yeah.
A backing singer. Or if they suddenly they just want a backing singer, but you also happen to play guitar, fantastic. You know what I mean? It's one less hotel room, one less flight, one less wage.
Great point. Great point.
Yeah.
What gig that you've played in the past do you wish you could have been in the audience for?
Well, some of the Nelson Mandela stuff that we did.
Oh, wow. Nelson Mandela. Is that what you're on stage
just
with
him? Just briefly, yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he was... something else. Those shows were just fantastic. But I never got, well, rarely. There were some bits where I wasn't playing, but other than that, I was playing all the time. Mm. And I thought, this must be really cool, really cool. You know, Peter Gabriel, Robert Plant, Beyonce, U2.
Who were you playing with for that show?
All of them. Well, no, not all of them. Robert had his own band.
Yeah, because my friend, Clive, I don't know if you know Clive Deamer, he's Radiohead's live drummer now. He played that show with Robert Plant. He was a drummer.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, he's a friend of us. He's been on the podcast as well, yeah. So I'm trying to think. So you were the backing band apart from Robert Plant's band, is that right?
Gabriel kind of had his own band, but then he got up and did some stuff with us as well.
Right, okay.
But other than that, yeah, just about everybody.
How did you get to meet Nelson Mandela? Was that on stage or was that...
Annie Lennox. Just off stage, you know. Yeah. There's a point where he came along and said hello to people. I kind of happened to be there. But yeah, we did 6 or 7 of those all around the world. New York, a couple in South Africa, in Tromsø, in the Arctic Circle.
Really?
Norway, up there. And they were just incredible gigs. It was all organized by, Jim Beach was the executive producer, Queen's manager.
Oh, right, yeah.
He kind of got them all together.
Miami.
Yes.
Yeah, actually happen a bit.
I've never been in a room when he's been called that. So I think maybe in the early days.
Yeah. Who do you become on stage that you're not off stage?
Well, I'm not sure there's a lot of difference.
Great answer, yeah.
I'm trying to think of... Well, to my mind, same person, you know.
So, we had a break a little while ago, and we were speaking about some potential stories we should tell. So, the names I've got in front of me, Morrissey, Robbie Williams, Sacha Baron Cohen, Bob Geldof, Sinead O'Connor... Where do we start?
Okay, let's start with the toilet stories, the toilet chronicles. For some reason, I've run into celebrities in the toilets. I mean, usually that I'm working with, but or sharing a bill with on a festival, something like that, or in a rehearsal room. Okay, start with Robbie. It's not much of a story, this one, but I was going into at Music Bank where we were rehearsing with Queen.
Yeah,
and I went to go into the toilets. I was on the phone to Katie, my daughter.
Yep.
You know.
Who put us in touch for this podcast, I should add, yeah.
Thanks, Kate. Love you. I was on the phone to Kate, who's a huge Robbie Williams fan. And as I'm walking into the toilet, I wasn't concentrated. The toilet door opens, Robbie Williams walks into me, literally. I said, oh, sorry. He said, hey, no worries. And she goes, Dad, are you talking to me or to somebody else? And I said, well, just talking to Robbie Williams, actually. She went, what? But he'd gone by then. And I thought that I should have said, Robbie, just have a word.
Yeah.
Make my life easier. Just have a word, say hello. You know, which I'm sure he would have been delighted to do. Yeah, I've met him a few times since. Okay, that's one story. Sinead O'Connor, we were doing a festival. I can't remember who with. I had no idea. But we were all getting changed in this manor house and we all had our own rooms. I go into the toilet. The door is not only unlocked, but open a few inches. I push it open. Sinead O'Connor is sitting on the toilet. And I look at her. I just stop and look at her. And she goes, hello there, I'm just having a pee. And I said, okay, I can see that. Good. I said, you could maybe shut the door. She goes, ha ha ha. Just carries on. You know, sitting there, no inhibition, no nothing. So I just... backed out. That was one. Okay, another one, Roger Daltrey. I was doing a gig in Seattle with him. And I go, and I'm having a wee at the urinal. Door opens, he comes in, he comes and stands at the urinal next to me. And he undoes his flies. Gets his knob out, and he goes, oh, that water's cold. And I've used that many times since. Thanks, Rod. Thanks for that.
And Sacha Baron Cohen?
Sacha Baron Cohen, we were doing a gig. It's kind of like an essayist thing on national Freddy for a day thing or whatever. Was that called something like that? At the Savoy.
Okay. Nice.
Where, and at the time I was playing with Tom Jones, but, and Tom was staying there. I knew he was staying there. So I said, hey, Tom, come down. Do you want to come down and do a song? You know? I said, yeah, sure. So he was a Geordie as well. Yeah, sure.
And Sean Connery was there.
Oh, he was there too. Yes. So,
three-part harmony.
Yeah. and Brian was there, and he was doing a couple of songs. That was kind of one way to get Tom to come and say, I said, Brian's doing it. You know, it'd be great. It's okay, fine. So we get up and we do a couple of things. Tom does, what's it called? Night with you. Does that one, and it's all fine. We take a break. I go off and go to the gents, and I'm standing at the urinal. Sacha Baron Cohen comes in, who's just a punter there, just watching, hanging out, because he was involved with the Freddie, the Queen musical at the time, film at the time, and he's standing there, and he turns to me, and we're both having a wee, and he says. He says, oh, fantastic, love the band. Everything sounds great out there, really impressive. I said, oh, thank you very much. And then he's still just looking at me like this. And I'm looking down, and then I'm aware that he's looking at me. And so I turn around to look at him again. And he says, I'm not looking at your cock, you know. I said, it's nice to hear, thanks. Okay, good. Eyes front then, so we did, and that was that.
And soon after, he pulled out of the Queen film.
Yes, soon after, because of the weird people involved. Yeah.
Morrissey turning up for a.
Oh, Morrissey! That was.
So you recording a video with?
We're doing a video with Chrissy with the Pretenders for a song called "Sense of Purpose," I think it was. Mm-hmm. This has been about 1990, something like that, ish. And we're having a little break, and I'm chatting with Chrissy. Morrissey comes up, and Chrissy introduces me. So this is Jamie, my guitar player. Morrissey. Okay, and she says, right, I've got something to do. I'll see you later. And she walks off, and I'm left standing there, because to be completely honest, I'm sure he's a very nice guy, but I don't have a lot to say to him, really. Not my thing, really. And I went, so, and I said, so you're Morrissey then? He says, yeah, I used to be in a band called The Smiths. And I said, okay. Well, can't you stand here chatting all day? And off I went. And that was it.
Geldof, you've obviously mentioned that you've worked with him in the past.
Yeah,
what was the thing about
he's
you crossing,
funny.
What was the thing about you crossing?
Crossing the East German border.
Yeah.
We'd done a gig in East Germany, and we had to. Well, the next gig was in West Germany somewhere, or maybe in Poland. I can't remember. But Niall Power, the lovely guy, the drummer, and myself had left our passports at the hotel in mm-hmm. East Germany.
Mm.
If we'd have gone back to get them, we would have missed the gig.
Right.
Gone the following day. So there was no time to. They said, we'll send them on by special courier, but they still, we won't be able to get them to you by the time you have to cross the border. So Geldof goes, there's only one way we can get round this. That is for you and Niall to get in the driver's cabin underneath the bus. It's like a luggage bay.
Yeah.
It's about the size of a very small luggage bay. Yeah. All it is a bed.
Yeah.
Really. With a door. So I'm going, oh no, I'm going to have to smuggle you across the East German border.
Shit.
This is before the wall came down.
Yeah.
And
they were brutal when you went through.
Oh, God, yes.
My uncle had stories about him crossing, and they were brutal.
Yeah. The other way around. We were going into East Germany, and we'd been to Brandenburg Gate, and we'd been done the whole tourist thing, and we'd bought all the gear, and, you know, so on. So they put us in the thing, and we're aware that we feel the bus stop, stops, and we hear these voices go, Rouse, Rouse, and we can hear dogs and everything, and we can hear them banging on the bus, all the way along the bus, like, and we go, oh, shit. And eventually the banging gets closer until it's on the door like that.
Fuck.
Come out now, Rouse, Rouse. We know you're in there, come out now. Then we went, oh. So we kind of opened the door, me and Noel, like this, and there's flashlights in our faces.
Oh, my
and
God.
All this really drizzly night, and we could see the streetlights, but silhouettes in the streetlights of the border guards of the, with the hats on, the coats, and we're behind them, it's going on. Of course, the light gets shined in the faces. It's Geldof and the violin player wearing the board, wearing all the stuff, and the keyboard player is behind him going.
That is a great stitch up.
A fantastic stitch up, you bastards! Yeah. And I said, right. So, but it turns out we had stopped before. We had already crossed the border.
Oh,
so we were complete bastards. Yeah,
that is a great one. That is a great one. Tell us about John Deacon. He's obviously been out of the spotlight for quite a few years. Tell us, you played with him, I think. And...
Just once, only once. Okay. I only met him the once at the, I suppose it was called the Bottom Line there in Shepherd's Bush. Next, what's it called now? The Walkabout or something, is it?
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of 2 doors down from the Empire.
Oh, okay. And yeah, I do
it's
know
another venue.
Yeah,
holds
yeah.
about 1,000, I think.
Yeah, something. Shepherd's Bush Empire.
Yeah, we were doing that, and John got up and played with us. He's a really, really nice guy.
How long ago was that?
Because he played great, you know. That was in the early days of the SAS band. It must have been...
Had he been retired then?
94, 95.
Oh, okay, so there was...
Yeah, he was... No, he was retired. Yeah. Yeah, because after Fred died, he didn't...
Yeah, he didn't do much, yeah.
Didn't
yeah.
do any anymore. Yeah. And, of course, and they don't see him, and you don't just don't see him now, do you? He's a bit of a recluse, I think.
Yeah.
Spike's got a theory that nobody sees him because all the royalty checks have come through his letterbox and he can't actually get out the door because they've all piled up in front of the door.
Could yeah. be, could
yeah,
be.
Could be that.
And Tom Jones, you mentioned Tom Jones there. You played the Queen's Jubilee gig with him, didn't you?
Yes.
Is that right? You played Mama Told Me Not to Come.
Yep, and Delilah, yeah.
And Delilah, yeah.
Yeah.
So we had someone, Milton McDonald, who also played that show. He's Gary Barlow and Take That's Guitarist. He's in ELO now, actually. And he was saying that it was an absolute car crash backstage and it was just real flying by the seats of the pants, that kind of thing. And did you have the same experience? Can you remember? No, everything went really smoothly?
Really smoothly.
Oh,
it was fine. I mean, during rehearsals, I mean, I wasn't into looking back on it now. I should have just gone, yeah, that'll be fine. But, you know, they didn't have a Fender amp. They said, we've got to use the house. Mm. Everybody's got to use the same amps and everything. And they had a PV amp for me. And I thought, how many people use PV amps? Surely, like a Fender, it'd be more universally acceptable and everything. But anyway, it was fine. It sounded great, actually, on the day, I must say. So, no, everything was fine. We did a great set, I thought. Tom sang really well.
Mm.
And everything was fine.
How do you...
I don't know what was it, but I will tell you another story about that day.
On.
Fucking Ed Sheeran, that's what I'll tell you, because because I was we'd done our set, and I went into the bar, and the only with Toby, the keyboard player, and the only people in there was Ed Sheeran and his mate sitting up at the bar, and I ordered a beer. I went, yeah, all right, and he said, yeah, okay. I was drinking my beer out of the bottle, and he said, that's not how you drink a beer. I said, What do you mean? He says, come on, I'll show you how. I said, you're only 7. You're not going to tell me how to drink. Have you any idea how long I've been drinking beer? So he got a straw and put it down into my bottle, folded it down over the top.
Yeah.
He says, there, put your thumb over that now. He says, and drink it. And it just whoosh. I think he called it a shotgun.
Yeah.
I was slaughtered.
Really?
I mean, I had like one of those and a couple more drinks and I was slaughtered. Fantastic. I was going to the palace now. And of course, then we went for the party in the palace and I was...
Wow.
Yeah.
To the Queen?
No. So Prince Edward I met and Stevie Wonder was in there and everything.
Wow.
Well, we'd done the New York Mandela show with him.
Of course.
So, and of course, he didn't know I was there, but
yeah.
but I was. And yeah. I did come up and tell him. I said, oh,
the radio is blasting, someone's knocking at the door. Looking at my
So you kind of live the dream here, and you know, you're at a stage in your career where you're playing great gigs and you're on the road all the time. And you know, I wonder, what fears do you have for the music industry, and how might those fears be addressed?
Oh, I just wish people would play live properly and be honest. And I'm sick of hearing computers every time I turn it on the radio. The only time, you know, there's a radio station that I told you about. Mm. That's music from the 60s and 70s, before computers were even, well, invented, but certainly not used in music. And now I can hear the copying and pasting, you know?
Mm.
You hear a chorus and it's exactly the same. Maybe they've added another instrument, but the vocal performance is exactly the same. The guitar performance is exactly the same. And the same sequence. There's this thing called the four chord trick. Do you know about this?
Is it the fact that the four chords you can play pretty much most popular songs of the last 30 years by playing?
No, everybody's writing songs with those four chords.
Yeah.
And it's one bar in each one. So it would be
G minor C D or C A minor
C.
C A minor. Oh, okay. Okay, so C G.
Which, funnily enough, is Let It Be as well.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
But I mean, but then it goes Let It Be, G, Let It Be. Let it be, yeah, let it be. Another bar on that. Let it be.
Yeah.
So, and then. So, you know, it is the four chord trick, but there's more to it than that.
Mm.
So many songs, you check them out.
Yeah.
There will be those chords, not necessarily in that order, but that's it. And it's one bar on each.
Yeah.
Even if you were to put, you know, half a bar on, just to break it up, to change it. But once you've heard it, you'll never stop hearing it on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And you can identify it as that. And on the piano, it's this.
Mm.
Those three. Bomb, 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 bomb.
Yeah.
Those three shapes.
Yeah.
C, G, F, and A minor.
Yeah.
They're three fingers, all white notes.
Yeah.
Any monkey can do it.
Yeah.
Anybody can do it.
So
literally, I could take anybody walking down the street, show them how to do it. And once you've done that, you put that into a computer, let's write a song around that.
You know, I think that's because with computers, you can make so many mistakes now that people are getting lazy. So I reckon the level of complexity of current musicians, and I can't count myself in this, is nowhere near as, you know, it's not as detailed as your generation, because you couldn't fuck up. Otherwise, you're wasting recording, you know.
Yes.
Whereas this, I can do a take. All right, great. That I fucked up there, but I can just splice that. Right, another take.
Yeah, I did it right there. Just take that and copy and paste
exactly,
it. I got to say, I'm guilty of doing it myself sometimes for the sake of time.
Yeah.
You know, I should do that verse again.
It lacks character, doesn't it? Sometimes,
but it does lack character and feel and emotion and all this stuff. And it's just, it's annoying. All the vocals are tuned.
One of my favorite,
you know, people. You listen to some of the old stuff, the Beatles stuff. Not so much the Beach Boys, but the Beatles stuff. You listen to it. Some of it's terribly out of tune, but it's fucking great.
It's a character, yeah.
And the songs are magnificent. They've taken some time. They've taken some time with lyrics as well.
Mm.
It's not banal. The first thing, "Oh, I love you, baby. Yeah, I'll take my love up high, high in the sky."
Yeah.
That's bullshit. You know, think about what you're saying.
Absolutely. Jamie, thank you for your enlightenment and your humility and your significant contribution to the music industry. 99% of musicians playing original music play to empty rooms. So if you're ever having a bad day and feel like you're sick of your job, just remember how much hard work you've put in and your success is testament to that. Good luck with the upcoming tour. So you're playing Spike's All-Band, is that All-Star?
All-Stars,
band?
Yeah. We've got doing the Empire in Shepherd's Bush.
Yes, that's the 14th September.
Portsmouth Guild Hall.
Yeah.
A couple of nights at the Brook in Southampton. They're kind of a warm-up gig.
Nice.
And I'm doing this 80s invasion tour, which starts with this thing with Sister Sledge and Jason Donovan and
awesome.
Everything.
Yeah.
That's in November. And I've got ongoing dates with Paul Young and with Los Pecaminos, all kinds of stuff.
And your own stuff. So you've changed the name for the band that you've been in for quite a few years, and you've changed it to Jamie and the Falcons. Is that right?
That's it. Yeah. Jamie and the Falcons instead of the world famous Red Sox. So if you can't find us as Jamie and the Falcons, look up the world famous. It's part of one of the reasons we changed it, because you Google the Red Sox, it's all baseball teams.
Yeah.
Most people forget to put the world famous on, and it's too.
Good point. Yeah.
So so we're now Jamie and the Falcons, but it's the same band that did all that stuff for McCartney and with Keith and Tina Turner and Genesis and the Queen and everything. We've done all those people. So
and are they just? They're not just private gigs. They're like you can you play gigs all over the place, up and down.
Yeah, it's mostly private stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
So
once in a while, we do.
Listeners.
We did the Grand Prix at Silverstone.
Did you?
You know, yeah. Cool. If you, well, it'd be 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Now, but and it's all the top musicians that play. You know, Spike plays keyboards in it.
Brilliant.
And then we got Stroudy, who plays with the SAS band, and it's all just top players
mm-hmm.
in that band. It's kind of become the band to book really for parties.
And where can we find you?
At Jamie and the Falcons. .com.
JamieandtheFalcons.com.
Right,
cool.
Yeah.
Right. My next birthday, you're in.
Yeah. Cool. Pleasure.
Cool. It's been so enlightening, and thank you for your wisdom and your insight, and hope you've enjoyed it, and thanks for being such a great guest on the
stage. I've had a ball. Thank you, Chris. Really, really good time. Thank you very much.
Nice one. Cheers. That was Jamie Moses, what an absolute legend and absolute gentleman, such an interesting guy. Thank you to Jamie for appearing on the Stage Left podcast. For more episodes, go to thestageleftpodcast.com. You'll find everything you want on there. And also, you know, just you know, up and coming, we've got, if you're based in London or based in the UK, we have our Stage Left Night Supper Clubs with Mo Pleasure, who is Michael Jackson's keyboardist for the This Is It tour, and one with John Woff from the 1975 coming up, where he's going to be playing a tribute to John Coltrane. So please get onto our Instagram page, the Stage Left Podcast, or Stage Left Nights, and we'll see you there for further conversation. Bye for now.